Joe, how you doing?
I thought you were going to ask me that. and I have to tell you, because I was criticized by my wife a few minutes ago for never answering that question with anything that's real.
Well, most people don't really want to know when they ask.
Well, yeah, that. Exactly. Okay, we've been married for 33 years, so I mean, come on. But, I mean, what's to hide? But the thing is, so I was thinking, well, what should I say? You know, and I go, well, okay, so let me think. I'm moody, but not maudlin. I'm moderate, but not milquetoast, and I'm perky, but not overcaffeinated. So I'm ready for powers and principalities. I'm ready to speak the truth, but there's a problem in that it's hard, it's awkward for people with our peculiar way of looking at the world, Tim, to actually have real conversations with children, with our children and with young people in general. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about this earlier, and I think it's a great thing to discuss. It's very difficult to speak the truth to children or to know how to do it if you're in the free-minded world that we live in. And so, you know, I wanted to get your take on how do we speak the truth to children? How do we, once you start to realize that the government is a malevolent secret society, the media is a propaganda device, the military is a Praetorian guard for evil. What do we say to our kids and to young people that we meet, Tim?
It's a challenge, because if you are a stereotypical conspiracy theorist living in your parents' basement with a neck beard and eating, you know, with no female company and no children in the offing and no children to speak of, no children around, they don't have that problem, right? Because they're not raising children. And raising children is a whole other thing. The problem is a lot of this stuff is dark. It's blue. It's weird. It's disturbing. And to get into it, you really have to be careful what you tell children. You have to make sure it's age appropriate. And of course, as they get a little older, you can deal with it a little differently. And as they get more sophisticated, and that's not like anything else. When you're raising children, you want them to learn how to navigate the world, so they're not defenseless. But at the same time, in the process, not assault their innocence. Because I do think the children, at a certain point, need an environment, a sort of a aesthetic of innocence, as someone once described it, just an aesthetic of innocence that so much the world seems determined to destroy, to deny them that childhood. And often, if you get into some of this research, you can very easily, you know, become that which you supposedly hate. And what I mean by that is, you don't want to overload their sensory perception or even their minds with too much at an early age, because it really can be all too much. It's frankly, it's too much for most adults. And at least personally, how I came to look at some of these things, it was gradual. And so I never got overwhelmed by it. It was just sort of a gradual learning process because of I think it's, a lot of that's a function of timing. I came of age at a time before the computer age, before the digital age, before the internet. So I wasn't overloaded, but I was highly propagandized because I learned the standard narrative, you know, the corporate propaganda that we all fed as history, as civics and these things, how the world really works, and high school and civics classes. And I went to college and, you know, was spoon-fed a lot of stuff there, but I've always had a sort of a skeptical view of these things, because always kind of growing up in a conservative family, I was very skeptical of the school system of these things. I always recognized that the educational establishment was, quote, liberal, you know, so I was in that dialectic, but it made me skeptical of institutions, and I kind of saw the institutions as being liberal and hostile to family values, you know, ideas of limited government and what really constitutes the good life, the moral life. And in many respects, that was an accurate assessment, but I think we all come to realize that that was sort of a dialectic that we were led into, because it wasn't the good right versus the bad left. And I think honest people on the left realized that too, that they were fed a certain vision of the right. It wasn't the good left versus the bad right. We're all being corralled into this by the ruling elite, you know, by the oligarchs, by the secret societies and the institutions that they created. But when it comes to teaching children about things like history, whether it's economics, history, life in general, you have to develop a way that you can gradually introduce them to some of these truths and sort of spare them some of the illusions and lies that we were fed, particularly you as a baby boomer. That's probably the most mind-controlled generation out there, is probably the baby boomers. Yeah. I think you'll probably test that as deprogramming or trying to break the mind control of a baby boomer is probably the most difficult task, because they're so dedicated to that view. It's almost impossible. But with children, again, the point is you got to, especially if they're being, well, for me, it's easier because I homeschool my children. So it's easier to protect them and sort of control the curriculum and what they're being taught. It's a little bit more difficult if your kids are out in school. And this is the main point I'm talking about, is sometimes some of these topics violate the canon, sort of the doctrine that we have to believe to be to participate in polite society, to eventually to gain gainful employment and live what's considered a normal productive life in America. And if you espouse some of these views that challenge the doctrine, you can find yourself ostracized and not being able to lead what is considered a normal life or have a family. Or even, so you have to be careful about what you introduce to these children at first, because they can find themselves in some awkward situations at someone's birthday party, at the pool, or on the little league team. And when they're younger, they don't have the sophistication, the knowledge, or the grammar to really address these things without coming off sounding, you know, like you're being raised by insane parents. So that's the dilemma, you know. And then you have to worry about things like, you know, little things when you want to take your kid to the museum. Well, museum of American history, and you're seeing all this propaganda, and you know, it's visually it's very entertaining for the children, but it's all propaganda, you know. So you find yourself being the one, you know, pointing that's wrong, that's lies, that's wrong, that's lies, and you end up spoiling the trip. And you have to ask yourself, do you just not go to these places anymore because it's just propaganda? You know, whether it's going to Mount Vernon or going to Monticello or going to see the Gettysburg battlefield or something. And so that's the difficulty, because when you're trying to teach a revisionist view of history, a corrective view of history, and it's very complicated, because a lot of these things isn't a question of just reversing it and saying, well, the good guys are the bad guys and the bad guys are the good guys. It's not that simple. So that's a brief overview of the dilemma that we face, those who are seeking truth, seeking kind of correct, promote a revisionist view of history to correct the record, so to speak. At the same time, trying to educate kids and these kids in a proper view of things, and so that they get a healthy, more accurate view of how the world really works.
Right. Well, I couldn't agree more. I think that, you know, if I could do it over again, the first thing I would do would be to create an agenda of protection. I would try to protect their brain power. In other words, keep them away from vaccines, keep them away from the toxic medicine and toxic food, so that they can physically develop, mm-hmm. right? So that their brains can become strong and normal. That would be the very first thing. I would try to just actually, you know, not just in the family that I was in, but within the extended family that the child would be, you know, kind of living amongst, to see what can be done in terms of just physical protection of the child's development. And then the second thing would be how to protect them from the worst parts of the propaganda. And I think, you know, homeschooling is obviously the top choice there. You know, in the public schools, you know, I'm sure there are some good ones, but obviously there is just so much force-fed propaganda that, you know, if you can keep your child away from that, you're obviously better off. Homeschooling is very difficult. I'm sure you can attest to that. So a lot of people just can't do it. But if that's possible, that would be the one of the first steps to, you know, defensive of the mind so that you don't have a lot of propaganda. Then the next thing would be to defend the child against pornography. And pornography is sort of age specific. I mean, what might seem as, you know, romantic pablum to a jaded single bar male in his 40s might be inappropriate for a kid in, you know, 4 and 5 years old. But mm-hmm. when you go to these Disney channels, you know, you're getting a lot of very precocious,
yes,
you know, kind of sexual imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be the other thing in defensiveness, is try to get the sort of the pornographic culture away from the kid. So those are just some ideas about the defensive side of that a parent, you know, would be aware of. And then on, you know, what can be done to, you know, move the child to the point where they're going to be ready for the difficult talk. You know, it's sort of like the birds, the bees, and the secret society. It's a little much for like a sixth grader, you know, or 6 year old, you know, to like swallow. And so you
can't you learn about secret societies like in the playground, like I did. I mean, sex, like I did.
Right. Yeah.
Did you know? Have some friend tell you about it? An older sibling? Did you know the Freemasons actually run the world? No. They do what?
It's a little tough for the old 6 year old, but so that would be as far as moving them toward the point where you can start actually bringing information, you know, that's out of the mainstream, so to speak, to the child. I would try to, at a really early age, to get the child involved with logic and reason, and understand grammar, you know, from that perspective. Mm-hmm. Those would be the two things that I'd really be working with, is just how to detect a statement that's a false statement, and how to understand the fallacies. This doesn't get done in the public schools or even in a lot of private schools, and it's a huge oversight, and I think it's deliberate, in my opinion. And the earlier that the kids learn, the better. I would actually go so far as to, as the child learn the capacity to make sentences, and certainly if the child can do paragraphs, you know, in his speech, this would be, you know, the point where you'd want to start to bring these understandings to the child. And you know, there's a lot of really good tutorials on how to instruct this that are online. So if you're a young parent, you can just, you know, look at these tutorials on how to teach logic, how to like show children, you know, the fallacious statement, and get the child to be really good at that. This is also very defensive, because if the child learns about, you know, how to engage the world in this way, looking, you know, being aware of logical fallacies and lies and false statements, and how to detect them, and how to basically, you know, work through these things grammatically, then the child is less likely to just buy into, you know, there's a kind of bullyism that goes on, and I think, you know, very early age in a lot of the public schools, about this is what history is. And if the child is just, you know, you don't have to have him in a full-blooded rebellion, but if he's just one of those kids that you know, doesn't buy it. And I can remember, you know, you're talking about the baby boomer, how conditioned we are. And very, very true statement. I mean, the boomer is just a catastrophe intellectually. But I can remember going to classes, and every once in a while, there'd just be one pain in the ass. There would just be this one guy or girl who just wouldn't buy it. I mean, and this was, they weren't, you know, kind of, you know, kind of understanding secret societies. They just didn't buy anything, you know. They had the skepticism, and they functioned socially. In fact, in some cases, I can recall them being kind of popular because, you know, they would stand up to the teacher. The issue in my age, the one that was really kind of being, they were trying to shove down our throat, was the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
They were saying this was a great thing, or, you know, this was, there was reasonable grounds for it. And I can remember in 1966, there was this one girl, I can still remember her name, I won't give it, but she just didn't buy it. And she would stand up to the teachers and really, you know, she wasn't that articulate, but she was emotionally tough. And so that's the kind of personality I think a parent, you know, can envision for their daughter or son as they're growing up, is that you don't have to have the birds, the bees, and the secret society discussion with them. You just need to make them into that tenacious defender of no BS.
Mm-hmm.
Don't lie to me. You know, stop the lying, stop the propaganda, understanding propaganda. So that would be kind of the personality that I would try to engender. And then you'd have to protect the kid. Again, now it goes into protection, because, you know, the teachers are going to, at the teacher parent conference, they're going to say, well, we've got to get little, Adriana under control. You know, she's against the Mideast wars, you know, for God's sake.
She's oppositional defiance disorder.
Right, yeah. we're thinking of giving her medications. And so you've got to have to, the parent has to step in and really watch that carefully. You know, watch the system so it doesn't try to destroy the child with drugs or with, a psychiatrist. I mean, this is another thing. I mean, psychiatry or psychologist near my kid, this is where like the Second Amendment is like a great thing. You know, I mean, it's you just cannot permit that. That is just, I'm sorry. I know there are people out there. I mean, I have family members that are psychologists, and I know, hey, they're really reasonable people. I don't know too much about the science, whatever there is in back of their practice, but I know that they're very good people and they mean well. But man, a lay person could never tell a good from a bad therapist. You would never. How would a labor? It's like trying to tell, like, you know, good or bad medicine, you know, put in your body. All you can do is just say, look, there are other ways of dealing with the situation. I'm not going to risk, you know, getting a cultural Marxist Frankfurt School, you know, cutout that get his talons into the minds of my kid. Forget it. So those are, you know, that's kind of like the overview of like getting the kid through the first grade. If you can do homeschooling, do it. And then, try to organize a social circle to the extent you can that's like-minded, that you don't have to have, you don't have to have the secret society talk with every single parent. But you do need to just have, we're going to be open to ideas and to logical thinking. You know, I mean, that's the kind of, all you'd need to have to be able to start to create an alternative community. And then have some understanding of the curriculum, that's going to be given to the kid. So that brings us up to the big moment, Tim. Now you've got, we've got them through the first grade, fourth grade, but there's this moment in time where you've got to have the talk with them. What do you say?
Well, for me, I would gradually introduce them to things so they kind of develop a worldview that could handle some of these issues, whether it's 9/11 or false flag terrorism or the JFK assassination, and maybe dealing with historical matters first, because they're at a respectable distance where it's not quite as personal, and usually you can handle those a little better without being as immediately threatening. Good example, you can pontificate on who really killed John F. Kennedy and Robert F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King, and you can pontificate and theorize on that and not be quite as threatening to people as if you addressed 9/11, because it's not in their for most people, it's not in their memory anymore, right? Or they're very, you know, because it was more than 50 years ago. So you can address those things, perhaps. But that's, you know, little things like my two sons will be watching a typical World War II documentary or something. They're going to some battle or something, and one of my oldest son is interested in World War II, so I'm getting some books on it. And at this point, I'm satisfied with him learning names, chronology, and maps about the conflict. But sometimes we're watching a documentary, of course, the documentary, and we're watching it, and it has a typical British narrator, you know, with a British accent. And I tell my son, says, you're watching a documentary about a war between Great Britain, the United States, and Germany, and the narrator speaking English. Do you think it might be a little biased? Yeah. So I'm injecting a little skepticism, you know, in that, you know, so you have to consider there's at least two sides to every story, and there's usually more. And that's really true when it comes to World War II, very complex event. And so things like that. So they start to develop these thoughts. My son was telling me last year, he was, you know, they're on his Little League team, and two kids are hanging out in the outfield, not doing much during practice. And they were both talking about the Hiroshima bomb and how their parents were against the bombing of Hiroshima. You know, so they're talking about it. So that's, you know, and for age 9 or 10, that's a relatively safe conversation. Some other matters, you know, I wouldn't get into things like organized pedophilia, human trafficking, and the, you know, these things. Daughters, two older daughters, I gradually introduced them to the notion that, you know, there are creeps in the world and there's bad people out there. And one thing you're talking about protecting them. That's another thing is trying to get them as separated as much as possible from popular culture. Not so much, you know, telling them thou shalt not look at it or touch it. It's not introducing it home in the first place, so they don't become used to it. It's like junk food, right? If you never bring it in, they don't really develop a real taste for it. And so, by not having cable television, ready access to the stuff, and kind of controlling what they watch, not being prohibitive and everything, but just being selective, they never develop the draw towards popular culture, which is the source for so much toxic influence. And unfortunately, that's the public school is the main vector for that for most kids. Is that's the source of a lot of toxins, whether it's literal toxins with vaccines or the toxic culture and the popular culture, the sort of the peer pressure that that places like Disney and the popular culture create, this whole youth culture that they create. Whereas if they're homeschooled or something, then they never have to really suffer that. And so they're able to develop emotionally and intellectually, without being bombarded with all those messages. So they're better, you're just in a better state of mind, which is kind of what you were alluding to earlier, both, you know, healthy with their diet and healthy with the information they get. And they're more, a little bit more independent minded, not so much concerned about peer pressure. But yeah, to me, it's sort of a gradual introduction of some of these issues, like whether it's JFK, World War II. And as they get older, I'll get more, I'll introduce more complex themes and issues to them. And hopefully they'll develop the ability to articulate it. I want them to have the capacity, the language skills to articulate a point of view, and know the timing when to address it and these things. To have some sort of discretion in some of these matters.
Well, I would advocate a kind of a specific pedagogy, actually. Mm-hmm. And what I would suggest is that whenever they're at the age of reason, where these concepts could be comprehended, is to take them in the abstract of the false flag. And I would just say, okay, so this is something that exists. And I would say people don't really talk about it that much. But they do exist, and explain what the false flag is. Mm-hmm. And once the false flag was understood, then I would take them to some non-emotional kind of stuff they could talk with in the outfield in Little League. Like, yeah. For example, the one I would suggest is the Gulf of Tonkin. I don't think anybody would really, kick a kid out of school if you brought up the idea that the Gulf of Tonkin was a false flag. And I wouldn't really, at the beginning, in false flag 101, I wouldn't be trying to press the kid to accept either the correctness or incorrectness of the theories about the Gulf of Tonkin, but just to see if you could get the kid to understand that people think that the Gulf of Tonkin is a false flag.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't really happen the way we were told it, and that the government did it to shape the minds of the people. So the two key concepts would be, that the government has a false flag when it does stuff, and that the reason it does this is to get people to think a certain way. So just that would be 101. I mean, if you could get a kid just to have that as an understanding, right? Then the next one, in false flag 102, I know this is kind of going to sound weird, but I would go to the P2 Lodge. Because of the documentation about it.
Yeah.
Now, this is going to be kind of complicated for, say the kid is in fifth or sixth grade. But I think, if the kid is, maybe just has been shown a little bit about logic and lying and things like this, they can probably do it. I think that it would be kind of useful for someone to actually develop the pedagogy. So in other words, homeschoolers should be able to, order a textbook called False Flag,
mm-hmm.
and then work, every year the class could have a little bit more complex information given into understanding it. Eventually, in my opinion, to graduate from the Tim Kelly High School, you would need a certificate in 911,
mm-hmm.
that a high school kid, someone who's 18, should be able to understand. And again, I think particularly since kids are so often rebellious, you don't want to be forcing it, but just you really want them to be able to defend both sides of the argument, right? Mm-hmm. I think if you can defend successfully both sides of the argument of the 911 false flag argument, and also argue coherently what the people who dispute it as it's not a false flag. I think that would be a great criteria, for someone to be able to then go into college. Because one of the problems that we have is that we can homeschool our kids, but it's hard to home college our kids.
Yeah.
At some point they go off, and I'm pretty familiar with this because it wasn't that long ago. And let me just tell you, the universities are absolute cesspool.
Aren't they bastions of free thought and inquiry?
Yeah, free thought. I mean, the best part about the universities is the binge drinking and the drug use. That would be the wholesomest part of it. The worldview that's given and the sexuality that's promoted and the propaganda, it's just so relentless. It is really beyond belief. And so if you can keep the kids away from college, again, this gets to protection, but at 18, it's hard to control them. They're legal adults. The other mm-hmm. culture is pulling on them. They may want to go to university. And then if you're in university, you're going to have to take, same-sex bathroom 101, and now how does a parent protect them? Well, mm-hmm. you can't at that point. All you can hope is that you have shown them what propaganda is, why it is used, and given them the ability to think clearly and the capacity, the courage to stand up and be that person in a room who just doesn't let the teacher or, you know, the administration get BS, you know. Mm-hmm. They'll probably get kicked out, but that's the best thing that could happen because if you ask me, you really want to get the kids kicked out of college. That would be ideal, and you want them out of there as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. The only thing the skill training, given that the fact that the universities and colleges are complete cesspools, what you need to do is just develop a curriculum of skill training that has a good employment possibility that doesn't force the kids into the university, like learning how to code. I mean, if you're good at coding, right? If you know C++, and mm-hmm. You can get a job, and you can create software. You know, there's a lot of entrepreneurial things that are available if you have these higher level skills, knowing how to use the internet really well. So these are the things that can be done to enable a child to live in truth and then to grow in truth and not have to go through the intense propaganda phase of the university. Letting your child go away at 18 to the cultural Marxists, the only thing that could excuse such an act is ignorance. You know, I had no idea what I was doing, and I'll regret it forever, but that was just what happened, you know. And in fact, they've got us so spun around, Tim, it's so upside down that parents are desperate to get their kids into the Ivy League schools. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was like a big deal.
That's because social advancement is just so important in America. And, you know, that's how where they get you. You have to go to college because what would the neighbors think? What will my family think if my kid isn't college educated, as they say? You know, one of the ways that at least my children have been introduced somewhat into some of these issues is just by listening to the various discussions or arguments that I've had with other family members at gatherings. You know,
right? That must be a lot of fun.
You know, so they hear things, and sometimes the illogic of my opponents are so obvious that when we get home, they start making fun of it. because we'll have an argument by my brother's pool or something, and you know, they're just locked into the false left-right paradigm, and you know, and the standard narrative. They're just wholly invested in it, like hook, line, and sinker. It just as part of their life. So whether talking about some topic, whether it's 9/11 or the JFK assassination or vaccines or the medical industrial complex or the whole system, the banking system and these things. And they pick up a little bit. And sometimes I'll be just sarcastic. You know, the saying goes, if they can put a man on the moon, why can't they do this? And my phrase is always, my phrase is, you know, if they can fake the moon landing, why can't they do this? That's what I always say. So it's been picked up that, you know, the kids kind of know to question these things. They're not the doctrinaire on these things, and they got time to learn, but it's just the idea that these things can be entertained as valid questions, you know? And so that's how it's conducted, you know, in my household or when I go out, you know?
So. Yeah. Great example. And I'll tell you, the moon landing is another one that would be like a Gulf of Tonkin.
Yeah.
It may be a little more controversial, but I think it's one that, it's becoming more and more absurd. I mean, the longer we go without, you know, doing it again, the more obvious it is we didn't go in the first place. And that's something that it's a good exercise, I think, in reason and logic. It's something, you know, that the kids can actually investigate and look at both sides of the equation. You know, it's another good subject to kind of teach them the intellectual balance, right? To take in what is being given as truth and then say, well, before I accept it, I'm going to go have a process inside myself of a review, and we'll see how the evidence stacks up and what I actually end up believing. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what you want them to do, is to have that pause, you know, where the information comes in. But just like the, those students that just were, you know, refusing to be bullied into, you know, some kind of position they didn't accept. You just want the, your children to have that moment where they go, you know, I'm just going to think about that a little bit. Because like with the moon landing, that's when I think a really precocious, like 16, 17 year old could really get his or her teeth into. And once they saw that, you know, once they saw, you know, this could really be true, that this is completely fake. That would be a great kind of moment where now the child and becoming young adult is really illuminated, mm-hmm. right? I mean, suddenly he goes, wait a second, you know, that this is fake. This whole thing was staged, you know, for propaganda, for distraction. What is then the purpose of this? You know, and they can start now. You can move into the adult world.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the government is, the secret society is malevolent, you know.
Yeah, and you know, they have no problem in putting some of these things in movies if the subject's a little different. Good example, your typical mob movie, you know, whether it's The Godfather or Goodfellas, you'll see just pervasive corruption, the complete corruption of the system, that nothing works as it appears, nothing works as it's supposed to be. There's always the black hand, there's always corruption, bribery, murder. Just below the surface, really controlling the system, and a very thin veneer of legitimacy is maintained to pull the wool over the, you know, the gullible, you know, the people's eyes. But within these movies, you'll see the functioning of a secret society. You'll see politicians being bribed, people being murdered, corrupt police, bribed judges, and these things. And so, if they can sit back and watch a 3-hour movie about this. And say, well, yeah, this is plausible. You know, this is true about organized crime. Well, just expand that understanding to politics in general, to the economy in general, the banking system. And if they learn the rudiments of how money is, what money is supposed to be, and what banking and checking accounts and these things, how you balance your checking account, then how do you justify something like the Federal Reserve that can just print money, you know, print money on a computer screen and give it to their friends and these things. And it becomes very awesome, something that is treated as something sort of boring or esoteric or just too complicated. It isn't complicated at all. That's all just smoke and mirrors there to beguile you and scare you away from asking the difficult questions, you know, these things. And it's not that difficult. If I can understand it, for Pete's sake, I'm sorry.
Right. And that's another thing that I would really, you know, add to the curriculum is just an understanding of American finance, which is to say how the Federal Reserve operates and mm-hmm. how they have no cost of goods and they create credit out of thin air and then they can sell it to tribe members at, you know, 0.5% and to the primary banks who then give it to your local bank at, mm-hmm. you know, 1.5% or 2%, and then you pay 5%, 4.5%. Now, this is theft, and, you know, it is not free enterprise, because when you have no cost of goods, it isn't free. It's obviously a racket. And of course, it creates debasement of the currency.
Mm-hmm.
Because when, you know, there is no cost of good with the production of money, then money obviously will be created into infinity eventually. And so then all of the hard work to obtain money will be for naught. And so that's something that every child should understand. They should understand the nature of credit, and they should understand the debasement of currency. I think that would really help them basically with their own lives, because they could take some defenses against currency being debased. You know, even things like cryptocurrency would be something that kids should be aware of, that like the sort of what they are, what they aren't. It's you know, finances is a really important part of what you can teach a child, and do it at a young age. And again, it's not that controversial. It's not exactly outfield discussion, but, you know, maybe Little League, but maybe Pony League, you know, you could, you know, talk about this stuff.
And also the manipulation of finance, the alchemy of finance, as George Soros calls it, is if you get some understanding of how crucial that is in maintaining the power structure, in maintaining control of so many things, because they can buy off so many people.
Right. I mean, yeah. Of course. Well, I mean, once they took control of the Federal Reserve, they basically owned the world.
Yeah.
I mean, they could basically, you know, create trillions and trillions of dollars and charge interest out of nothing and charge interest for them. I tell you what, Tim, just let me have the Federal Reserve for a couple months and you'll see how rich I could become.
Yeah, I'll be a genius.
I would be a genius. I'd be a financial wizard like George Soros. I mean, if you have unlimited credit and you don't really ever, then you can never lose, because if you do lose, you just have more credit.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, you know, in advance when a certain event's going to happen, so you can leave, you can exit the market and come back in and buy it up for a song and, you know, kind of be on the right side of that. When you make sure you have a chair to sit down when the music stops, because you know when the music is going to stop. But that's,
well, not only that, you can sell the chairs short, you know, and like in the people who understood 9-1-1 was coming. And that's, you know, when you get to 9-1-1, what age do you think you should wait to? I know this is a hard question because it more depends on intellectual development, but just as a general principle, what would you say? Is it 18?
It's probably too late, because they can do
okay. Some... 16. When do you think would be the right time to
18? 18, they can join the military, go fight terrorists.
you want to do it before they enlist? Yeah,
long before that. Like, well, you know, like I said, I've told the story before. Is when I think my eldest son was 6 or 7, and he was writing in a workbook. I would a reading comprehension of history, and it was the subject was about the World War II Memorial in Washington D.C., and the couple paragraphs explained the history of it. And his job was to read about it and then answer the questions. So it's kind of reading comprehension. And some of the questions, why was the memorial built? And he goes, and he wrote to trick people into joining the army.
A+.
And so
then, you know, that would be like you skip a grade with that answer. That's ingenious.
And so, you know, that's that type of skepticism will perhaps spare him and an entire generation a lot of grief if more people have the attitude. You know, like your generation, what if someone gave a war and no one showed up, right? That's the big question. Why are these people so mind controlled that they show up for these things, you know? You know, my personally, because it's kind of unfolded, I would say probably they were like, they don't think about it every day, but they're aware of the controversy, and they're into their hobbies and their things because they're children. And like I said, there's a certain coming of age, a certain, you know, period where they should be given their allowed to have their innocence, where they can develop in these things. And you can really upset a kid if you load them down with too much and turn them off to it. But it was kind of gradual. I would say, you know, 13, 14, when they start to ask some of these guys. I mean, that's how old I was when I started getting kind of interested in politics, you know, to the extent that I understood things when I was 13 or 14. Now, obviously, my views have changed dramatically since I was 13 or 14, because I just was come across more information, and your views should change, you know, when you acquire more information, your understanding of the world's hopefully it's a lot more sophisticated now than it was when I was 14. For a lot of people, it isn't the case. They learn a narrative and they stick to it. But with kids, if it's in our household with these things being discussed, it's good. They're going to pick up on it. And so they know there's some questions in these things. And, so they know when they, you know, playing among their cousins that, you know, that their father has a certain view that's different than their father's about these things.
Yeah, but you know, I would think that's an important moment. In other words, once the kid has an awareness of politics in a general sense, I think that's probably, you can't really go a whole lot longer without discussing some of these issues.
Yeah, so that's a difficult, you sit down and have a serious sitting down and having a specific discussion about that. That's a hard one. When to do that, or you just over the course of several discussions, these things are discussed. They sort of accumulate, or over the course of several discussions, they kind of sort of take in these things, and so they come to an understanding. I've never had a sit down discussion with my kids about any number of these things, other than just what I've told them when I sit down talking about a certain event in history, or explaining something like the World War II and the firebombing of the German cities and the destruction that the war wrought, or the true nature of the so-called American Civil War. how they you know, they have an understanding that the issue primarily was secession and these things. Of course, I haven't gotten into some of the more complicated aspects of the war itself, because you get into Freemasonry and Albert Pike and these things. And so the idea that wars are waged by higher powers, and the people are the fodder who fight these wars for these higher powers. And wars are always fought for lies, over lies, and they're never fought for the reasons that are claimed by the governments.
Those are great points, and I would think that a child with an open mind would want to know, well, who are these people?
Mm-hmm.
What are they? And
now that's when I go out, when I feel ready, go out and read this book.
Would you suggest any particular book that people might want to have on their library prepared to give to a kid to read? What would be a This is a good question. It's mm-hmm. what are there really any books? There are a lot of books on 9/11, and there are books now online, there are all sorts of them about government's conspiracy, about the nature of Freemasonry, about elite Jewish banking families. I mean, the Creature from Jekyll Island, I think, might be a book that would be valuable from the economic thing, but there really isn't a curriculum, a book I can think of, that would plug into a curriculum naturally. Can you think of any? Or I mean, it just doesn't. Nothing comes to mind.
No, as far as addressing younger people, there isn't, there is no textbook for these things that would address these things. Whether it's putting the Gulf of Tonkin in context of the JFK assassination.
Tim, I'd like to throw this out to our audience. Someone should create this book. There should be a textbook of kind of the alternative understanding of history.
Mm-hmm.
It should go into the Masonic background of the United States. It should go into an honest understanding of elite Jewish banking families and their participation in the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
It should go into an honest understanding of there are different ways to look at how World War II was set up. And then you should, I think it'd really be valuable to go into things like, of course, 9/11, but just to the idea that our political class might be a pack of lifetime actors, and that the dialectics that the population are given are just for distraction, and that Trump and Hillary or Bush and Obama are actually just from the same group. They just represent different issues so that the public thinks that there's a democracy occurring. I think a textbook like that would be a good seller if it was online. I think if it was well done, something you can make a lot of money on, and I think it'd be incredibly valuable. So, Tim, I'm going to volunteer you and also me. If anyone wants to take the task, we'll help it with editing and with giving in input if we can, because this is something that really should be done immediately. Don't you think? Shouldn't there just be an immediate the alternative history of the United States created for clear thinking people, 101. It should be there, but it's not.
No, there isn't. There isn't. I mean, you have things like Oliver Stone's thing, but that's carried on Netflix, so I'm skeptical.
I hate to say it. I've had some connection with that group, but I think it's a limited hangout, and I don't trust Oliver whatsoever. I know he was on O'Reilly, and he asked him point blank about 9/11. Was it an inside job? And Stone just kind of meekly says no.
Yep.
I mean, wait a second, Oliver, back up here. Building falls straight down, free fall speed. Sorry, buddy. You're not a moron. You don't believe this. You're lying. You're a limited hangout. So, that's just the end of the bell curve of information that they're giving to the public within the propaganda context. We really want, we want something that's really open-minded.
Yeah.
And the book should be maybe it could just be an internet phenomena, but I think it should actually be a great, if it's actually in print, then people can write book reviews. you know, parents can discuss it. And I mean, we could write, I'd like to write the chapter on vaccines and and the autistic as the, you know, the foundation of the Brave New World. I could write that chapter. And so there's a lot of things that could be, you know, cobbled together pretty quickly. And then we'd have a hard copy book that could be offered to, you know, because believe it or not, there are thousands and thousands of parents who are in the actual position that we're discussing right now.
Yep.
Tens of thousands, hundred thousand. And they don't have anything in the library they can turn to as just, you know, age appropriate curriculum for the free mind.
Yeah, that's difficult. I mean, I had a, I had like a 20-minute discussion with my daughter about the history of the medical industrial complex. And it started out about just a conversation about the hepatitis B shot.
Yeah.
For babies. And just kind of branched into a conversation about what the medical industry is all about and why, you know, and I didn't have to go into it too in depth, but just how it's all structured. And, you know, if they're doing this, then why would you trust them with that? And how it was set up, you know, the whole thing of allopathic medicine was a business thing, model set up by the Rockefellers to sell snake oil.
Yeah,
in terms of pharmaceuticals, because it comes from petroleum.
Yeah, right.
You know, and if you just a little basic history of this stuff, and you know, so it gives them a little intellectual self defense, and maybe spark a little curiosity. And this is something that was never told me when I was, you know, 16 or 17, because no one knew it. It just wasn't out there. You know, in the past 20 years, there's been an information revolution with the internet, and so you have all this dispersed information that you're able to avail yourself of, and even communicate like we're talking right now. So you can develop these electronic communities, which is now they're trying. YouTube is working with Google, with Twitter, and, you know, and Facebook to destroy it. They're trying to shut down, take people's videos down and shut down their.
Well, they want to take out the free speech and leave the propaganda.
Yeah, they're really just signing their own death warrant, because they're just people will just go to other platforms or develop decentralized platforms that do this. But they're really showing their face here. What they're really, I mean, it's so obvious. It's so just in your face, you know, censorship that it's laughable.
And hopefully it'll have a good, strong response to it. Like you say, alternative platforms will be developed. I wanted to go back to your point about, the vaccine thing.
Mm-hmm.
This shows to me, like, it brought to mind the idea of the age appropriateness of when some of these ideas should be broached with children, because what personally I wouldn't want to happen is for the child to develop a sense of trust in the authority of doctors.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to instill right there, is that I make jokes about when would men in white coats ever want to hurt you, and they laugh.
You know? Right. Yeah.
You know. So yeah, that's the same on my joke about the moon landing. You know, if they can fake the moon landing, why can't they, you know, develop a toaster that works? You know, the joke. You know. So it becomes just a part of their everyday conversation to hear it. It's sort of the environment that they develop in, and that's sort of a gradual, you're not pushing it too far, you're not going to shock them with anything, and they just kind of develop that. So it's sort of like the way that a lot of people develop just by conversations around the dinner table. Their worldview is developed by that.
But I just think that that's something that at an early age would be good to broach, that the doctors can't be trusted. They're, you know, just to put that idea out there, so that there would be, neural activity create kind of balance inside the individual, rather, because there's so much socialization, you know, and all you look at television, just the way they set doctors up and vaccines up as, you know, these automatically valuable things, and then people just get socialized, you know, if they just get repeated these concepts enough times, and then, well, here comes the advertisement for the flu vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
I better take it. You know, I mean, it shows the movie with the guy with the white smock giving me the jab. and I don't want to get the flu, so I'll just go and get my flu vaccine, you know, automatic, no thought process. Well, that's not right, you know. This is bad socialization on the part of the parent. The child should have developed, you know, a kind of a sense of skepticism, would want to see the actual data, you know, where is the efficacy of the vaccines, what are the you know, occurrences of, you know, side effects and, you know, like what am I actually getting with this? Mm-hmm. Those are the things that need to occur mentally in, you know, in an adult. And so I think it's a pretty early age is what I'm saying, is that those ideas about you can't really trust doctors. Doctors are basically employees of people trying to sell stuff to us. I mean, I think that should be like first and second grade material.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas, like, you know, the baby boomer generation, my generation, were taught to really look to doctors as, you know, the source of miracle cures and these things, and vaccines were just thought as good. You needed vaccines of these things, and they did it gradually, because remember, you know, at first they just did a few shots here and there, and it seemed to make sense. And then when they started really stepping up the schedule, you know, and all of a sudden you have all these this outbreak of childhood allergies and long, you know, chronic illnesses in children.
Yeah, and that's the other thing I would try to show I would ask the child to try to develop understanding of the relationship between, you know, the things that you see, the obesity in kids, the diabetes, the autism, the allergies. I mean, the child should be made aware that he is or she is living in a sick, you know, physically sick society.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be, and it wasn't always this way, and doesn't have to be that way.
Exactly.
After the, you know, the shooting down in Florida, this is just how sick everything is. There's a news report about a guy who's designing bulletproof backpacks. Kevlar for kids. I don't know.
Kevlar for kids.
Now, let me ask you a question.
If
you think your child is so threatened, the likelihood of him being shot at school would necessitate you buying body armor. Maybe you should not send him. You ought not send him to that school. I mean, think about that.
Tim, God help me. You're just such a clear-minded individual. I don't know how you can function in this world. Right. That would be like kind of the first question. Well, you know, like I said,
this is the new. This is in the news report. This is the new reality that parents are facing. It's ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's the new reality, is the new world order, where they're trying to create an acceptance and an everyday reality to the police state inside the school system. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's the police state is going to be there for protection, and then it'll gradually be out in the streets for the adults, so that we're going to have a TSA, you know, individual on every block. And the reason this is being done and accelerated, why you can see the acceleration of it now, is because there's unfortunately too much free thinking going on.
Yeah.
I just do not think they anticipated the power of the alt media.
No, this is why you have this blatant crackdown like on YouTube, where you know, community guidelines, you're having, the harassing talkers.
Fake news. Yeah. I saw this Bloomberg show, and they used the expression, and they were, you know, it's interesting. I wish I'd taped it. I'd like to play it, but I didn't, and I'm not sure I can recreate it. But I just felt a little bit of anxiety and tension in the voice of the talking heads when they were going through the concept. It's like there's just a little bit of desperation that maybe are of concern that's starting to get into the mainstream propagandists about the power of the the alt media, Time magazine had an article, it was about how fake news is becoming this real problem. Dianne Feinstein, a piece of work that woman is, she was saying, well, you know, we gave you the freedom to create these things, and now you're not policing them properly, and so we may have to step in. You know, and they
gave us the freedom,
right? Yeah, exactly. So she's just a complete. I mean, I just don't get me started. But you know, the thing is that you can see the lying right off the bat, because what the alt media does is almost never news. It doesn't talk about, you know, facts very seldom. It almost, or if it does, it puts them in the context of analysis. These are analysts, you know, from the most homely kind of guy who's got, you know, a podcast with, you know, 15 people who are all relatives watching it, to, you know, Alex Jones, that kind of stuff. It's analysis. These are clearly areas that are protected by, you know, by First Amendment. And so they should never, you know, the idea that Feinstein's a proposal to, you know, we're going to have to step in and police it. I mean, it's just this is just, I think, an indication that they're seeing that they're, wait a second, are, you know, they have algorithms, obviously, right?
Yeah.
I mean, algorithm for everything. They must have looked at the development of people who are like questioning 911 and who I think are now starting to question just the existence of a secret society. And they go, wait a second, this wasn't in the algorithm. When we developed the internet, we did not have this plugged in, and we were supposed to be here at this point, and the minds would be shaped in this way by that point. They're going, wait a second, this may be getting out of control. You know, let's hope it is, Tim, and let's try to fan the fires of freedom, because this is really our chance, you know?
Yeah, and that's another thing is if you look at it, Google and YouTube and Facebook, they claim that these are private platforms, private corporations, and you agree to their terms and conditions in these things, this stuff you never read. Therefore, they have a right to ban you and kick you off and set these standards. That's BS, because all these platforms were developed on the internet, which is developed by DARPA. I think right. Google and Facebook were funded by InQtel, which is a equity company created by the CIA, i.e. taxpayer money. So these are all ultimately corporations that have profited mightily and developed out of public funding. So there is no private claim here to these corporations. Even Silicon Valley has, I mean, the engine behind that, government research and funding. It's a typical fascist economics where you have all this, you know, money being funneled into these corporations, whether it's the universities or through the military, enriching these corporations, you know, all paid for by taxpayer dollars. So all these corporations are public and private partnerships, so to speak. So they have no real claim to being, you know, this is our company. No, we've been forced to pay for your growth. Now, don't tell us you have no right to use it.
Right. And of course, and the idea that, well, you know, freedom of speech exists except for areas that, you know, are, basically commercial, you know, avenues.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a second. Show me in the Constitution where this occurs. This would be like saying, well, you don't have freedom of speech if you're inside, you know, my apartment house.
Yeah.
Now, if I rent you the apartment, this is my commercial space. The First Amendment stops right here at the door. You know, I'm sorry. The Constitution is a transcendent document. If you guys want to be outside of the Constitution, then get your platforms out of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Get them out. Get them away from us, because our power, our right for free speech, is the transcendent legal principle. If you can't abide by our power for free speech, then you get the hell out.
Mm-hmm.
You just shut Google down. You shut Facebook down. You shut these fascist platforms down. And we will replace them with ones that can live with inside the Constitution. So this, you know, when Feinstein goes to the mattresses, so to speak, and says she's going to wage war against people who are using these areas for free speech, well, they've you know, they're basically showing their hand. You know, this is the hand of the fascist New World Order,
mm-hmm.
and the right response is basically to organize the a rebellion so that they cannot take the power away from us. You know, really, I mean, what the parallel to the kind of the alternative media in my mind would be sort of like the union movement that occurred like you know, in the latter parts of the 19th century, early in the 20th century. I mean, I know that there was, you know, obviously compromise and the organized crime broke in and, you know, but for a period of time, there was real power in the hands of the worker. And by using strikes, right, mm-hmm. they actually shut things down. And with that power, they actually had some political potency for a brief period of time before the unions were, you know, they were compromised and basically destroyed. Well, once again, the citizen has a chance here with the internet, with our ability to communicate, with this information we can exchange. And this time we really have to fight with everything we have to protect it, preserve it, not let people take it away from us, because this is our moment, you know, and this is our tool. They created it for mind control. But let's just hope that, you know, we can flip it around. And that's why, you know, with children, I would make them, you want to protect them and also you want to give them the truth. Make them really conversant with the internet. Make them understand how to create alternative platforms if need be. I mean, this is programming, but to understand alternative platforms, you know, these are things that, these are the birthrights of free speech, of someone wanting to engage in free speech in America. And so we just have to give that information to the kids. It's part of what, the kind of the truth that we need to tell children.
Speaking of children and teachers, did you hear that story of that teacher who was, I guess she's described as a white nationalist? She had a blog and then she was suspended or something?
No, oh my.
You know, and thinking, I'm not familiar with her material, but I'm just reading this. Well, first of all, what is a white nationalist? I don't know what they mean by that. So she's teaching, and then she had a blog where she expressed her views that were controversial, so she was suspended because of some of her political views. Now, did it ever bleed into what she taught her kids? I didn't, for what I read, it didn't seem like she was doing that. She was just a person who had a job, had an opinion, then she was doxxed, as they say, and then it's just taken for granted that she loses her job. Well, yeah, I was talking to a young lady the other day who whose son was having trouble with his teacher, and because he called him a quote a fag. Turns out the teacher is a transvestite, a male transvestite.
Is that why he was upset?
And so she went in and said, "Well, I'll tell him not to call people names, but I can't ask him to respect that person. We're Catholic, and that person is obviously disturbed." But this is the absurdity, the insanity of the institution. The institution is there protecting and encouraging this obviously disturbed individual, putting this guy in charge of some 30 kids, and no one has the critical faculty to say no. Whatever he is, he shouldn't be entrusted with kids all day. He's obviously got a psychological disorder. He's got a problem. And he's so obsessed with his own narcissism, he can't understand why a young boy might have a problem with this. He has to make a case about it. He comes in dressed like a woman, and he's wondering why some of the boys in class are a little taken aback by that. I would say the real violence there is to the sensibilities and the psychology of the young people that the system is allowing him to be entrusted with. But the system has lost all, you know, again, it's not insanity, it's malevolence.
Yeah, it's weaponized. I mean, they know perfectly well what's going to happen to the minds and the sexuality of kids who have transvestite teachers, and that's why they're promoting it. You know, and they're going to be giving the kids vaccines and you know, estrogen mimicking you know, kind of an environment, so that you're going to have like basically a whole culture of homosexuality and beyond. And of course, the ultimate goal is the Brave New World, where there are no families, where all individuals can only be created by the state, and the state will own these individuals and create the intellect that is appropriate. The delta and epsilon classes will, you know, the autistic will have certain roles, and then, you know, on up to, you know, the tribe that runs stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is what it's about. this is why the family was destroyed, and this is the, you know, they're very pretty close to the goal line when they can actually put a transvestite as a teacher of young people, and then expel a child who reacts against it.
Yeah, who has a healthy reaction in the final analysis to this stuff.
You know, right. You know, right. What, I mean, the normal and you know, the reaction that reflects, you know, 2 billion years of evolution.
And the social justice warrior reaction will be the healthy reaction is pathologized and thinking, looking at an obviously confused individual who's acting to be a female.
Right.
You know, and it's the little boy that's the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were that mother, I understand. I would have said, you are all insane here.
Well, yeah, you know, the
thing is, you're all insane here. You are all crazy.
They are insane. And see, this is an environment that the only thing you can do is just remove the child.
Yes.
You must remove the child from that environment. There's no point in even talking to the administration or anyone else, because if they've actually got the transvestite as a teacher, the institution is completely compromised at this point. There is nothing left to discuss here. You have to separate from the institution. And since the public schools are also promoting vaccines.
Yes.
Well, just, you know, it's like, don't hesitate, run, grab the kid, get in the car and drive away.
And then when a portion of the kids develop gender dysphoria because they got a transvestite teacher and perhaps they're living in a broken home and they have no one to relate to, no role models. And this is being suggested to a 7 or 8 year old that this is normal. They'll say, well, he's a little confused. Maybe you should have a reassignment operation done.
Of course. I mean, you know that the psychiatrist will be there with the suggestion, almost looking for these individuals. And then, of course, the government will be there with full funding. And the you know, if it's a male who becomes a female, they will then give them, you know, the estrogen, you know, card, so they can, you know, there's no cost for the transformation. I mean, they just want to make it as easily as possible, because they know the more and more of such individuals that they put in society, the closer to the brave new world they are.
Yep.
And the public, you know, is distracted by the so-called moral confusion of the issue, and they just don't see that this is all just enslavement. You see, they don't get that. And again, this would go back to a child, because now imagine that child. Now, if you're the parent of that child who accurately described the individual as a fag, mm-hmm. which is basically a polite way of expressing, you know, what the child understood, or not, but it is an honest way of expressing it.
I said, so, out of the mouths of the babes, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Yeah, it's like the transvestite has no clothes.
Yeah. It's like you have to wait for the kid. The kid is, hey, you know, the kid has to point reality out to you.
Yeah, I mean, so someone is naked here, and so the thing is that the child needs to be, supported at that point. That's a really good example, Tim, because see, there it is. You know, the child had the only rational and kind of psychologically appropriate response to something as inappropriate as a transvestite being in charge of a classroom of children, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. The kid had the response. Now the parent has to take the kid out. Well, what are you going to talk with to the kid about the incident? You have to support the kid. You have to say, you were right. Mm-hmm. You were absolutely right. You were the one child. Remember I was talking about that, the capacity to be the one kid to stand up. Well, that kid was the kid. There, it wasn't the Vietnam War, it was the transvestite as teacher. But the kid stood up and he said, "The hell with you. I don't, my mind just doesn't process this. You see, I want a intellectual process to go on, you know, so I can kind of make sense out of my environment. And you know what? When I say fag, that's how the process begins. You know, it points out the dramatic difference between you and what I understand a normal male or normal female is." Mm-hmm. And that would have been a great point for a parent to interject and say, while I'm taking you out of this insane asylum, I mean, I wouldn't use these expressions, but just saying, you know, we want to talk about this. The kid needs to have clarity. The kid needs to have the confidence that the parent supports the kid's reality. If the parent is intimidated at that point, you're basically just moving the kid into the world of the psychiatrist with the sex change operation, mm-hmm. right? If the parent goes, well, you know, you really should think about the feelings of this person and that person and don't say things. If you repress the gender understanding that comes from 2 billion years of evolution, right, that the little kid was expressing, man, you may as well just toss the kid into the junk pile of, you know, polysexualism, because yep. how is that kid ever going to develop if his parents won't stand up for his own sense of reality, you know? So that would be the teaching moment, you know. Mm-hmm. Go take the kid out and just say, you know what, you were absolutely right and I couldn't be more proud of you.
And one thing that was, I think, with that particular example is a evidence of well-organized high-level malevolence. And that's one sure. thing, have children understand that there is malevolence at all levels, whether it's the education system, the public school system, entertainment, popular culture, these things. And I've done this with my own children, just a kind of idea of entertainment, movies, music, and popular culture is mind control, manipulation. They're being manipulated. And these things, so they're aware that these things aren't just benign entertainment, they're there to destroy you, to manipulate you, to harm yourself. And
do you talk to them about the nature of propaganda?
Yeah, but in the context, usually in the context of either like a politics or war or entertainment itself, like the Disney Channel, Disney Corporation, these things. You know, we've never been one to allow our kids to really imbibe that stuff or to take in a lot of the pop tarts that they're giving up. They're not into, you know, into the pop tart music, things like that. You know. And so that really, if you'll see the difference, because the programming isn't there if they're not into it. Like you see, what you see a lot of the other children, where they get into the pop culture aspect of it, you know.
Yeah, I mean the pop culture, as I see it, is just you know, it's a propaganda culture. You just have to find a way to sequester, to use mm-hmm. an expression, you know, like 100% of popular music. 100% of popular films. I mean, the films, I was like, what was this insane film that I think won the best picture? Water or something was called?
Oh, The Shape of Water?
Yeah, and it was about a woman that has an affair with a fish.
wasn't last year one about like a gay black guy? So it was a twofer?
Yeah, I mean, I was like, I mean, it's almost beyond the capacity to lampoon. You know,
what made this movie so great?
Well, I don't watch mainstream media.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't. I was trying to get some understanding of the Oscars, and I have like a capacity to look at, you know, some videotapes because I have Apple TV, you know, you can actually play stuff back. And so I went to this one place where they had some interviews with the actors who were in the red carpet. And this is how I know about the film, because I had no idea. I don't participate in mainstream media. I really I didn't know any of the movies. Don't know any of the actors. You know, I don't know them. I know that I don't know Hollywood in that way. I studied it from a different perspective. But anyway, so they had the male actor, and who had played the animal, the fish, and they said, you know, like, what was the toughest part about it? And he said, well, you know, the toughest part about it was like creating a derriere on the fish that was beautiful, like a human's.
What?
You can't make this stuff up, buddy. And he Ew. Said, because you really wanted to make it believable that the woman would be in love with the fish and would take her clothes off for the fish. This is sort of like a human fish creature. And so he was talking about how they had like worked hard to make the fish desirable.
Was like the creature from the Black Lagoon type?
Yeah, like the creature from the Black Lagoon. Exactly. It was like the
Gill Man.
But it was like the creature from the Black Lagoon disco, you know, yeah. that he got lucky and ended up with, with the heroin. And so this was literally,
this all started with King Kong, you know.
yeah, of course, which is like World War One, you know, agitprop stuff. But but the thing is that you know, you wonder, maybe they're progressing the propaganda and the sexual transformation a little too quickly. And you wonder if maybe the public will catch on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they said that the viewership of the Oscars was at a dramatic all-time low. And that people were speculating, well, maybe it's because they were upset about the pedophilia and the sexual antics of, you know, Fatty Weinstein and,
yeah,
you know, the stuff going on, you know, and stuff. They were saying maybe that was kind of part of it, you know, and stuff. And I thought to myself, nah, you're just lying like they always do in mainstream media. The reason it was so low is because so many people are catching on to this as malevolent government, Brave New World, mind controlling propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
That is what's happening. That's why you know, they can't get anybody to watch the Oscar except degenerates, is because that everybody is basically in one level or another, you know, starting to understand this. You see, Tim, we are getting through. Little tiny shows like ours and thousands of them, and the people discussing it, you know, in whispered tones, and with, you know, like everyone's a little worried about, you know, like, gee, can I talk about this stuff? But it's, the awakening is happening, you know, the morning in America, to use an expression.
Mm-hmm.
People are seeing that, wait a second, this isn't just garbage. This is a well thought out, you know, scheme to wreck the minds of the public, to transform their sexuality into basically the kind that Huxley described in Brave New World, where people don't have any, you know, they're it's not related to anything other than just a distraction from your job as an epsilon.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And you're never gonna have a family if you're, you know, if you marry a fish.
Well, unfortunately, that's what they're hoping, you know, is that you'll breed offspring. I mean, you know, I mean, this is like, people should draw the line somewhere, Tim. And when, you know, the government wants you to have a tadpole, I mean, this would be where I would say, you know, okay, let's just stop right now, you know. I just think we should stop right now, because, you know, you really want to draw the line at amphibians. You know, so I know people say I'm a prude. Okay. Could be, but you know, this is where you've just got to say, no, I'm sorry. We're not ready. We don't want to go there. You know, and it's, so you know, we, by exposing the nature of Hollywood and the malevolence and how it's related to the government overall program, the secret societies program, we're helping children, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't ever let them go to see The Shape of Water. I think that's the title.
Yeah,
is the shape of water.
Yeah.
You don't let a child go see something like that. You don't let a young person go see something like that. You know, you can't, how do you control the very precise psychological effects that the thing was created to have? You can't.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to sequester it, you know, sequester and defend, and then work on the other side to develop reason and a correct understanding of history.
Yep. Well, Joe, did we cover it?
Oh, man, I think we did. And thank you so much, Tim. And that was a lot of fun, and we will definitely get them next week. Okay, buddy.
Okay. Enjoy your weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.